Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with MSDN developer advisor Jean-Luc David. Jean-Luc is a leading international authority in software development. Jean-Luc, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
I'm really grateful for this opportunity to speak to you today and to participate in this podcast.
Jean-Luc, you are a developer advisor for Microsoft Canada. What does this mean?
Well, my role is to provide a Microsoft community connection point to the Canadian information and communication technology industry. We have a large advisor team in Canada representing disciplines such as operations and management, user experience, architecture and development. If you've attended a Microsoft product launch recently, I'm usually one of the presenters on stage. In the development team, we have four key members: John Bristow, who covers Western Canada; I cover Central Canada, primarily Ontario; Christian Beauclair covers Eastern Canada; and we have Xixing Zhang, who's our user experience expert. In my day-to-day role, I reach out to a wide technical audience, including community and user groups, faculty, students, and companies. My goal is really to support developers' careers and technical skills, to be an advocate for developers within Microsoft, and help build healthy connections within the community, from students right up to CIOs. For example, I get asked quite frequently from deans, chairs, and faculty for a connection point to the industry to validate curriculum and provide a real-world perspective. I'll help connect them to professional developer in the community. So in a nutshell, I want Canadian developers to be successful and satisfied using Microsoft technology.
Jean-Luc, I happen to know that your team is probably ranked number one in the world, and in fact, I did a travel to Redmond, and I just couldn't believe the sort of the innovation and creativity, the sort of the recognition, of the team members, and that you lead in this area, and you're highly respected worldwide. So, sort of kudos to the team and the fine work you've been doing.
Thank you. I'll pass that along to the team.
You know, Jean-Luc, you have written five technical books for Wiley Publishing. How does one go about becoming an author, and what motivates you to do this?
Well, I've been very fortunate to get the opportunity to write technical books on a number of topics. And in the process, I really discovered a true love for writing. Personally, it's a great excuse for me to go really deep in learning a technology. My most successful books have been Professional Visual Studio 2005 Team System, Professional Team Foundation Server, and Professional JavaScript 2nd Edition. The two first titles I mentioned sold over 10,000 copies. From a career perspective, book writing has been very beneficial. It's helped me get recognition and establish me as an international expert in several technology areas. For anyone interested in technical writing, my advice would be to start with shorter articles. For example, years ago, I discovered this really novel technique to obfuscate JavaScript code using server scripts. I tried to figure out different ways to monetize and patent a technique, but quickly realized that once a technique was out there, people would just share and learn it and so forth. So in response to this, I decided to write an article about the technique, and I continued to write from that point on. So the last point I'd make about being an author is that you won't become rich doing it. Computer books don't sell like Harry Potter novels, but writing a book can be very demanding resource and time-wise, so don't undertake a project like that lightly.
But as you indicated, writing articles and maybe contributing to blogs as a ways of sort of, or a means of kind of distributing the shared wisdom that you have to a wider audience, and that could also bring in additional income.
Absolutely. It gets you recognition, and there's nothing like being a consultant approaching a company and saying, I'd like to build your website, and by the way, I wrote the book on it.
Well, considering you wrote five technical books, and I know you have another one that you're working on, I think it's just amazing, and again, it speaks to your expertise.
Well, thank you.
At the Academic IT Dean Summit, you indicated that you work closely with schools. Can you describe this work and why it is important, and what is your call to action to the audience?
Before I joined Microsoft, I taught at Durham College as an instructor for 2 years in the Design and Communication Arts program. For that reason, and for many, many other reasons, I've forged strong connections with many schools across Ontario and around Canada. The work is really important, as students coming out of programs today are the developers of the future. The broad piece of feedback we've heard is that enrollments in post-secondary technology programs have declined across Canada. This is an alarming state of affairs. We're focused on helping the industry by working with schools, government, and other institutions to help them engage and get young students excited about technology. In fact, it's really exciting here in Canada. We have 35,000 new IT jobs in 2008, and it's really growing. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. One of the trends we've seen is an increase of interest in programs such as game development. Many schools are using applied learning techniques with games to teach core computer science skills in first-year computer science programs. For example, we've built a program called Game Camp, which allows students to learn and share experiences writing games for the Xbox 360 and the Zune. And you can learn more about it by going to www.gomental.ca. There's another Canadian program called Dream Spark, which was announced during Bill Gates' visit at the University of Waterloo in February this year. The program allows students to download and use many of our professional development tools at no cost. And you can learn more about DreamSpark at channel8.msdn.com. So many faculty members want to stay on top of technology, connect with their peers in industry, and most importantly, reduce the amount of work they need to do on a daily basis to prepare for classes. So as Microsoft, we have a number of programs to help support parents, students, and faculty. For faculty, we've already made a lot of curriculum that's freely available out there. So my call to action is that if you want to learn more about these programs, you can contact me or any of my team members at DevMent, so D-E-V-M-E-N-T, at Microsoft.com.
Well, one of the things I did was I was opening keynote to the National Council of IT Deans Summit, and I know that a number of colleges and institutes, some of their deans came up, and they're just speaking of the tremendous work that you've been doing in this outreach program and how it resonated with the students. And in fact, they particularly mentioned your work, Jean-Luc. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, thanks a lot. It's a topic I'm really passionate about. I love working with students, and in fact, last weekend I spent some time at the University of Windsor at a game camp working with students trying to build games, and it was a wonderful experience.
Jean-Luc, prior to joining Microsoft, you ran a successful development and consulting firm. Can you describe your work and five valuable lessons that you want to share?
Admittedly, I am an entrepreneur at heart. Along with the successful consulting firms, I also started companies that were less successful. So here are the five lessons I would like to share. The first one is get yourself a good accountant or lawyer, in fact. There's a lot of great advice that you can get from these professionals in establishing your business and in also saving money at the end of the day, especially with the accountant. Another important lesson is to learn to work in a team. Now, if you're an independent developer and you're running your own consulting company, you may not think that's quite as important. However, you will always be working with clients and teams of clients, and that skill set of being able to establish communication and clearly delivering expectations for a team is very important. The third lesson I would provide is manage scope creep and client expectations. Now, scope creep can be defined as sliding scale of expectations or changing requirements. So, for example, a client may give you three requirements for a software development project, and as you're working on those three requirements, two other requirements pop up. And this is called scope creep, as these requirements build up to a project that's unmanageable. And so learning how to work with a client and to be able to communicate the proper tone in order to deliver a software development project successfully is very important. The fourth lesson I would say is connect to your peers. It's quite an asset in going into community groups, knowing who your peers are, and discovering a lot of information from them. For example, I'll give you a personal example. The first one is when I started my company, I used to charge about $100 per website. This was years and years ago. and I would build websites for family, friends, and at the time I was severely undervaluing my services. And it was through my connection with my peers and through other consultants that I learned that, you know, I could probably charge about $1,000 per website. And one day, I decided to charge that amount, and to my surprise, my shock and surprise, the client accepted that price. So recognizing that there was a certain level standard of pricing in the industry, I wouldn't have recognized that without having connected to my peers. And the final one is learn how to handle failure. There's a principle that I abide by. It's the Pareto's principle. It's essentially the 80-20 rule. In recognizing that you're putting 100% of effort, only 20% of the effort you've put in will result in fruition of results, a good result. 80% of the time you will fail. And this is just based on some phenomena that Pareto, who was a mathematician, happened to observe in nature, and it happens to apply to business and many other industries. So by applying Pareto's principle, by understanding that failure is more likely to happen than success, you will be essentially preparing yourself very well for when you do succeed and when you do fail in a project.
What is the current state of SOA?
Services are becoming increasingly important. Recently, we ran an event called Energize IT in Toronto. I was responsible for setting up a session called Wild About Services. The room had a capacity of 130 people, and we had over 180 developers attend, standing room only. So Canadians are just starting to realize the importance of service-oriented architecture, especially as it relates to geographically distributed data and also in environments. So from a Microsoft perspective, we believe the right approach is through software plus services. Some applications and services make sense on the web, in the cloud. Others make more sense on a desktop. One key example of this is the Xbox Live service. The client dashboard is available on your console, but you can use the dashboard to connect to Live to download movies or play games with your friends. A corporate example of this is antivirus software. So the client sits on your desktop, but the value comes from the updates that are provided as a subscription to help your network and systems with the most latest definition.
What are the major interoperability challenges and their solutions?
There are a lot of major interoperability challenges out there. The first one is in sharing data. How do we share data across disparate systems? There's been a lot of work in our industry to do so. The first is the establishment of an organization called OASIS. And Microsoft is part of this organization along with very large companies like IBM and Sun. And essentially, we've established a set of standardizations on the communication of data across the wire. And one of the big challenges that is coming out right now is how do you share state across applications? Mobile devices, client, and websites are becoming more prevalent and in different form factors. And the challenge becomes, well, I have files stored on my computer. How do I retrieve those files on my mobile device? How do I share those files, you know, and get the most current version of the files? So the process of synchronizing the data is something that all the major technology companies are investigating right now. From a Microsoft perspective, we've essentially declared the open interoperability promise, which means that we are opening up a lot of the different file formats and standards that are out there to allow developers to be able to create interoperable software.
Sean, Luke, you have this amazing reputation. You know, in my travels, I come across many senior developers and infrastructure specialists, and you are a recognized international authority. So I want you to look into your crystal ball in terms of what are the 10 most important current roadmap-level tips involving software development.
Thanks, Stephen. I can think of five really important roadmap-level tips. for software development. The first one is leveraging services when you can. In the past, when I was a consultant, I built a GIS mobile application for a bank. Now, GIS means that it's an application that uses geographical data. The bank had to invest tens of thousands of dollars for that solution. And now today, because of the availability of really cheap terabyte hard drives and the availability of data, you can do it in a much more cost-efficient way using solutions like Virtual Earth from Microsoft, and there's Google Earth and other types of services like that. So it makes it a lot easier to build applications from that perspective. And so thinking of services may save you money. The second thing is to think about a software plus services approach. There are instances where you'd want to create an application that has a certain level of reliability even when you're disconnected from the web. So a client and service approach works really well. And the most basic example of a client and service or software plus services application is something like Outlook and Exchange. Essentially, your Outlook client sits on your desktop, and occasionally it would query the web to pull down your email being the data stored in the cloud. So this combination works really well, and it's something you should consider when you're architecting applications. The next thing I would say is to follow the tenets of test-driven development. Essentially, integrate testing through the development process, and specifically unit testing. And this will provide a higher level of quality within your application. The next thing I would say is to understand the foundational technologies that are out there, Microsoft and otherwise. And from a Microsoft perspective, think of it in terms of how will you manage your graphics, for example. So I'll give you an example of this. We have a technology called the Windows Presentation Framework, or Foundation. And the Windows Presentation Foundation is our one-ring-to-rule-them-all graphics API. And essentially, if you learn that one technology, you will be able to do and write tons of applications on different platforms, including Silverlight applications on the web and client applications. On top of that, the last tip I will provide is to specialize and understand how IT applies to different domains. The one growth area we've noticed is that IT is becoming very much ubiquitous across any given industry. And by learning a specific domain, you will be able to excel in that given industry.
Now, can you take that prior question and then apply it to the next, say, 3 to 5 years?
Absolutely. So if you take a look at leveraging services, as we move on year after year, one very important scenario will become massively distributed computing. And even the most basic tasks will be able to be distributed across multiple computers. If you think about software and services approach, then the device, client, and web interconnection becomes very important. And how information is shared between those different endpoints becomes very important also. In terms of test-driven development, and that brings up to another level where you're thinking about the entire process improvement and the way you implement services, and how you can use agile-type methodologies to improve the way you develop. In terms of understanding foundational technologies, also an understanding of the breadth of platform will allow you to make really good decisions as to what to do in terms of architecture in your applications. For example, for Microsoft, we've made an investment in the .NET Framework 2.0 as the foundation for the .NET Framework 3.0 and 3.5. So if you've invested in 2.0, it's paid dividends as your applications will continue working in future versions of the .NET Framework. And the last part is to specialize and understand how IT applies in different domains. And I think one of the key domains that will emerge as very important is health informatics. And in fact, many colleges and universities are focusing very, very strongly in that given area.
Jean-Luc, what are the most important broader IT and business challenges and solutions do you see, let's say, in 2008 or 9?
I see the most important or the important broader IT and business challenges as being, first, the holy grail, which is simplifying complex information and data. And we're starting to see this with simplified ways of interacting with applications, a better user experience, more discoverability of data. I'm also seeing that participatory technology is picking up. We have social networks like Facebook that are bringing in hundreds of thousands of users. And in tapping into these different social networks, you can tap into a whole new set of consumers, but also tap into a joined mind share of information. The next thing is distributed technologies, and we're starting to see a lot of advances in terms of cancer research by using distributed computers that are processing bits of a greater problem that could not be solved by a single computer. Another really great focus area is personalization. How do you create an application which will provide a very customized experience to the user and make them feel quite at ease in the way they use the application? And that ties into the user experience. And finally, there's eco computing or green IT, where we're focusing more on the impact of the computers and the impact of the power usage of applications, in the case of developers, in building and architecting our solutions.
I see a lot of churn in the industry, or I see a lot of flux. So what advice would you give to IT professionals and developers to stay on top of what is happening?
So we see developer community behaving in one of two ways. So you have startups that are essentially tapping into the latest technologies, and they can't keep up with all the technologies that are coming out. Then you have people who are working in legacy software who feel like they're being left behind because all of this technology is coming out from Microsoft and elsewhere. And in terms of being able to capture and understand how to keep up with this technology, we've identified three key areas that you can focus in. And the three key areas are online, offline, and community. So in terms of community, I mean user groups, associations, and societies. So a good example of this is INETA. INETA is a group of .NET user groups across the world that provide a connection point to the community to other developers. Another example is the Canadian Information Processing Society, which you are probably quite aware of, right, Stephen? And essentially, by joining these groups, you will become a lot more connected with the information that's out there. As the .NET user groups, for example, will provide you with a lot of the cutting-edge technologies that developers care about today. In terms of online, we have blogs, forums, and IRC. For example, this IT Manager's blog and podcast is an example of this. And online, I use a resource, Facebook, in order to manage my relationships with over almost 500 individuals. And if you consider the amount of time we have during the day, it would be impossible for me to have lunch with every single person. But Facebook allows me to keep track of where and what these people are doing and allows me to interact with them and maintain a relationship. And finally, we have offline, which includes conferences, industry events, and also connections with peers and experts and MVP. So what I've defined is these three key areas, and they're fairly broad. Now, what's important is really to figure out what are the beacons within those three key areas that will guide you in the right direction. So you have to find your own trusted resources within these three areas. And if you don't have a set of resources, what I would recommend is take a look at a blog of somebody you respect, somebody who also has the same interest as you and look at what blogs they're looking at and what events they're attending and attend those events, this will provide you with a really good starting point.
Jean-Luc, in your current role, what are the biggest challenges and their solutions in terms of what you do across the country, and how does this relate to business?
I have three key challenges that I have to go through, and the solutions are very difficult. So the first challenge is the scale and geography of Canada. Essentially, I'm relating to 200,000 developers across Canada, and how, you know, and they're each delving into different technologies. So how do you reach out to this great number of developers and stay relevant? And so our team at Microsoft Canada has decided to focus on career, and that's the one common area where developers want to develop their skills and so forth. And we found it to be a really successful point to reach out to people. The second challenge is the decline of ICT interest, especially in schools. And one of the reasons we've seen a decline is for because of multiple observations. First of all, students today are very much multimodal. You'll see a student sitting at a computer, typing in some text, working on their homework, while they're messaging their friends, while they're on the telephone, while watching TV, and somehow they're able to capture all this information. They're used to getting a lot of information all at once. And the problem is, when you put them into a classroom with an auditorium, and you put a professor at the front of the auditorium speaking to the students without any other kind of stimulus, the student tends to phase out. And so more participatory learning is required in that respect. The second thing is, students look at a computer the way we look at microwaves. We would look at a microwave as simply a tool to allow us to heat food. And students look at a computer as simply a way to communicate with friends. They don't really see it as their career. And the third thing we've observed is that a lot of parents and counselors in schools will advise the students that it's not a good idea to go into IT because of prior events such as the dot-com crash and so forth. But the IT industry is really growing and expanding, and there's a lot of jobs available, and it's a really great career option. So finding the ways to excite students, to inform them about the possibilities, is definitely an area we're focusing in. And the last one is the pace of change. It seems that, as you've mentioned before, a lot of information is being pushed out there, and it's very difficult to keep track of where to go and what kind of information you should be consuming. And what we're doing as a team at Microsoft is to really focus on the technologies that are in use today and provide information about what, how to best use the tools that you have, rather than focus on a product that will come out in 5 years from now. So the focus is on today, and we found that running events like this, where we're focusing on the actual tools that people are using, are met with a lot of satisfaction with developers.
Now, that's interesting when you talk about these three challenges, you know, and you talked about the scale and the geography of Canada, and I know you held this Ignite Your Career series where you had literally hundreds and hundreds of developers and infrastructure specialists listening to the webcast and interacting to try to get tips on to sort of charge their careers. And I know that, again, because of the, I was the keynote at the recent National Council of IT Deans Summit, you know, Microsoft was very prominent in trying to address the issues of the decline in the ICT interest. And by doing things like you, for example, reaching out to schools or providing programs or, as you said, game camps or DreamSpark and so forth, I should mention, of course, this whole idea of pace of change and helping to manage that by providing all sorts of resources offline, online, and in many other ways. So again, a remarkable job that you'd be doing, Jean-Luc, but also Microsoft. So just again, I want to thank you for that.
Thank you.
Jean-Luc, again, you know, you've got this amazing background and this great reputation internationally. Can you share some stories, maybe surprising stories or unexpected, amazing or humorous stories from your work?
Unfortunately, I have quite a lot of humorous stories to share with you. The first one relates to my interview with Microsoft. So essentially, it was a hot summer day, and I decided to bring my suit to Microsoft Canada. And so I took a taxi to the Microsoft Canada office, and about 10 minutes before the interview, I decided to put on the suit in the bathroom and come out and start my interview. Unfortunately, what I discovered is that I only brought my suit jacket, and I forgot to bring my suit pants. So essentially, all I had was a pair of jeans, a tie, a dress shirt, and a suit jacket. And so I felt quite embarrassed, walked in, did the interview, and got the job anyway. So that went well. Another really interesting experience I went through is the first game camp that we ever held. One thing that our team really wanted to show was how to transfer a game from a PC to an Xbox 360. And we were going to be the first ones in Canada to show this kind of functionality. So I flew to Redmond, and I met up with the Xbox team to pick up this development Xbox. It's a $10,000 Xbox. So I picked it up and went to the airport. Everything went fine. Went to the gate, boarded the plane, put the Xbox in the overhead along with my bag, and fell asleep. So I flew from Seattle to Las Vegas. And once I arrived in Las Vegas, took the Xbox out, made sure it was fine, walked to the gate, opened my bag, and realized that somebody had taken my wallet with my passport, my boarding pass, all of my identification, all of my money, all my credit cards, and I realized I only had $20 Canadian on my person, and essentially no way of proving who I was, no way of proving I was Canadian. To make matters worse, I was to fly a red eye to Toronto from Las Vegas in order to arrive at an event 1 hour before the start of the game camp to deliver the keynote session. So the thing I did was to approach the lady behind the counter, and I explained my situation, and she was kind enough to provide me with her cell phone, and I ended up calling all my credit card companies, and I called I called my bank and so forth. And then she said, you have two choices. The first choice is either to go visit your embassy here in the States, and it will probably take a few weeks for you to be able to get the proper documentation to go back to Canada. Or I can put you on this plane, and you can deal with the customs person in Toronto. But I had to prove somehow that I was Canadian. So what I ended up doing was going through all my luggage and finally finding a provincial health card, which I provided to the lady, and it had my photo, and it said Province of Ontario. She said, good enough. So she put me on the plane, and I flew back to Canada, and then I had to meet up with the customs officers without any passport, without any boarding pass, and no way of proving who I was. And luckily, the passport officer was very understanding and said, please contact Passport Canada to advise them that your passport's been stolen, but otherwise you're fine. Please, welcome to Canada. So I arrived at the airport, and I had $20, and I had 1 hour to get to the event. So what I ended up doing was taking a bus from Pearson Airport right down to Union Station, and it cost me $17.25. Then I had exactly $2.75 to take the subway up to College Street, and a streetcar. I arrived 10 minutes before the event and delivered the keynote. And my last story is essentially something that has always been amazing to me. This experience at Microsoft has been great. And one of the opportunities I got was to fly out to South Korea to join our Canadian teams for the Imagine Cup. The Imagine Cup is a competition for students to allow them to really shine and show some of the technologies that they've worked on. And one of the teams really blew me away. The name of the team was Team iDoll, and they're based at the University of British Columbia. And essentially, they built an application that interfaces with a doll, a CPR doll. So here's the deal. The students took a CPR class, and they found the experience to be really bad because they had two instructors and 50 students trying to take the class. And when the instructor wasn't around, they had no way of determining how well they got to perform the CPR operations on the doll. They had to be told exactly where to press and how much breathing they should put into the doll and so forth. So they decided to create this doll with sensors and create an application using .NET to track the doll's breathing patterns, to track the doll's pressure points, so that it would tell you immediately if you're pressing in the right spot. On top of that, they created a simulation application which would simulate the doll going through cardiac arrest or perhaps drowning. And so you can go through these different scenarios trying to revive the doll and look at the results of your CPR on the doll. On top of that, they created the sensor system for less than $100. So it becomes a very affordable solution for hospitals or other health organizations to adopt a technology like this. I found this group of students to be really inspiring, and it was simply one of many, many groups of students that were out there creating these wonderful applications.
Yeah, I like this story about the Imagine Cup, and have you ever considered sort of driving that into the Discovery Channel at all? I think it'd make a great story.
Absolutely. They were featured on Pulse 24, and they were interviewed. But Discovery Channel would be a very good idea.
Again, you know, Jean-Luc, because of your background now, can you provide your predictions of future IT and business trends and their implications and opportunities?
My prediction for future IT business trends include A, parallel computing. I think we're going to go even further with this, with more processing, more disk space, and more graphics-intensive applications. And this has an implication for developers. Essentially, all developers will need to learn how to write parallel-based applications and multi-threaded applications. So if you're a developer today, you should start taking a look at multi-threading and parallel computing. The second thing, which is a trend which will be emerging even more, is new input devices. So by new input devices, I mean devices that utilize touch, speech, eye and head movement, and other types of sensory motion detection. Now, one great example is the Microsoft Surface Table, which allows you to manipulate UI elements in your application using touch. We also announced that this kind of functionality would be available in the next version of Windows. And there's also other types of touch applications available on, say, the iPhone. So taking a look at these new input devices, how you can leverage them and creating new user experiences that will simplify the use of technology and the access to data will become something very big and a great opportunity. The next one is mesh computing. I mentioned this earlier. It's the ubiquitous data synchronization across devices, clients, and the web. And we have our own mesh synchronization system software, that technology that's coming out, which is called Live Mesh, and it's been demoed before. If you get the opportunity, go to livemesh.com and you can take a look at this technology and how it will impact you as a developer. The next trend is virtualization. Now, we've seen virtualization used right now for consolidating systems. And I'm going to tell you that I think the direction of virtualization will be even more focused on virtualizing assets in the operating system and so forth. The one piece of software we released not long ago was SoftGrid, and SoftGrid allows you to virtualize individual applications. And the one vision that I see for an operating system is an operating system that's not really an operating system, but rather a virtualization host, where you can launch applications right on top of this host, and essentially leverage the stability and the compatibility of that operating system. With the availability of solid-state drives and the ability for virtualized sessions to be able to launch instantly, because state is preserved within sessions, you'll be able to have these lightning-fast operating systems and lightning-fast systems that will essentially run on your desktop and even low-powered machines. And the last trend I see is even more of a push in green IT, creating hardware and software which uses lower power requirements and uses components that are biodegradable.
Now, that's a really interesting list, you know, like parallel computing, new input devices, mesh computing, virtualization, and green IT. That's a great laundry list. I love it.
Thank you.
So, talking about that and more, then, what would be your top recommended resources and why?
Well, everybody has their own resources, and the people I love to access or read about or read from are Scott Guthrie, Guy Kawasaki, the Soma Cigar, Tim O'Reilly, Bill Gates. I like to read books and read blogs of thought leaders and to learn more about the industry and to get a holistic view of what's happening in the industry. And essentially, those different resources are available to anybody. They may be relevant to you, but you have to find the ones that are more relevant to your interests.
You know, Jean-Luc, earlier you mentioned that, you know, you're recommending that IT professionals, workers, practitioners sort of connect with community groups in some way. You mentioned KIPS and others. INETA is another example. Well, to the audience, they may not be aware that you have a background as a MVP, a most valuable professional, and you're also as a user group leader. So what lessons can you share from these experiences?
The main lesson I can share is that involvement with community and volunteering your time can have huge benefits from a career perspective. I used to do work with the Psychology Foundation of Canada and learned that the head of the charities and non-for-profits are successful people like CEOs who will recognize you and provide you with more opportunities. So if you're not sure where to volunteer your time and where to go, there's a website called matchit.ca, which is one of the resources that my team likes to call the lab alike for IT professionals. And MatchIT will pair you up with a charity or nonprofit organization. So this is a perfect scenario if you're entering the job market for the first time or if you're switching jobs and you want to learn new skills. From a user group leader and MVP perspective, I learned that contributing and sharing your knowledge can result in great gains intellectually and from a career perspective. The best way to grow is to really surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, and our community has really amazing mindshare.
Jean-Luc, we will continue to follow your significant historical contributions on the broader global landscape and also here in Canada. And as I mentioned, you are part of a team that is ranked number one, I should say, in the world, and this is amongst more than 90 countries. So it speaks to your talent and the talent of your team members. So I want to thank you for sharing your time and wisdom and accumulated deep insights with us for this interview.
Well, thank you, Stephen, for your insightful questions, and keep up the great work with this podcast series and your blogging.
Well, it's a pleasure, and perhaps we can do another interview.
You bet.